Good morning, John.
Good morning, Scott.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Wow, that was... Oh, right, I forget you're into metal and shit, so...
I have a head start on deep voices.
That's so dope. Do you like discussing film under a leftist, anti-racist, anti-oppressionist religious lens?
Hell yeah, I do.
Me too, man. You ever been like watching cartoons from the 90s and been like, hey, wait a minute, these are like totally accidentally anti-capitalist poems?
I have done so, and I do like doing so.
I think we should do that today, because we've been making a bunch of episodes. We're now almost, we've been doing this for over a year.
Yeah.
And we haven't done any animated films.
Yeah, surprising, because I think we both really love animation.
I do. It's a wide-ranging genre, and it can be heavy, and while there are a lot of spiritual cartoons, and there's a lot of complicated cartoons, and if you go outside of America, you know, a lot of films just end up being like cinema that are animated, like what we're going to discuss, I believe, next week. But Western animation, it has a different style and different school, but that's what we're going to be discussing today.
Yeah.
So this is Popcorn Eschaton, on the Zebras in America channel, where me, Scott Thoreau, and John Arminio discuss films from a leftist spiritual perspective and try to find the seeds within and apply praxis and our education as possible, and just try to use our lenses to unpack. And we've had a couple heavy episodes, and
yeah,
we're going to our next episode's going to be real slice of life and nice, but then we're going heavy. When I say heavy, I mean World War II. So it's going to be rough, guys, but we can do it. Let me not say guys. It's going to be rough, y'all. Yeah. I really enjoy that y'all has become one of the most amazing, like, you know, gender-neutral way to talk to lots of people.
I feel... It was never part of my lexicon growing up, so I still feel uncomfortable using it. Like, it feels like I'm forcing it.
So, coming from Brooklyn, where a lot of us said use, which is also gender neutral, so that's awesome too. So I love that. Working more like working class comments like use and y'all have become like great ways to talk to a group of people. Because there was a time where we were like, hey, you know, you guys is actually doesn't just mean one person, but people are like, let's move past that. So we're moving past that. And I enjoyed using y'all as sort of like a joke back in the day, because I was from Brooklyn, where we don't use y'all. But then slowly it became something different.
Yeah. As a retail employee, I do wish there was a gender-neutral option or alternative to sir.
I know.
There's not even a good female version, because ma'am is not good for a variety of reasons. And there's certainly no gender-neutral version, which is frustrating.
Yes, it's hard, because I try to be very respectful in my job as well, without going into great detail what my job is, but you know that I'm a social worker, and sometimes I just want to show like a little bit of respect and a little bit of an honorific, and I'm like, you know, with elder generations, you can sort of, it still pretty much works, but
yeah,
you know, like my partner was doing a presentation about non-binary and LGBTQ skaters in Baltimore, and one of the person there was like 60 years old and was like, I'm a non-binary skater, and much like Grant Morrison, just didn't have the language for their experience growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, the great comic book writer Grant Morrison revealed that they were non-binary a few years ago, and they were like, yeah, I just, like, this is who I was. I just didn't have the language, which is why language is so powerful. That's how Noam Chomsky realized, as a linguist, by looking at the history of language, realized of the inequity and oppression in the world. But speaking of inequity and oppression and working class and the complications of telling working class stories in capitalistic environments, would you like to tell me about ants?
Yeah. So Ants is the 1998 DreamWorks film directed by Eric Darnell and Tim Johnson about a very anxious worker ant named Z, who finds himself the only ant frustrated with his sort of allotted lot in ant society and tries to discover different modes of being. So he swaps places with his soldier buddy, played by Sylvester Stallone. Yeah, a couple problematic bits of casting in both of these movies, but hey.
And when you talk about problematic casting, who are we talking about?
We're talking about the main character in Ants being played by Woody Allen.
Yep.
Wow. I get to hear him talk for 90 minutes. Kevin Spacey is the antagonist in A Bug's Life. Through the plot machinations of Ants, we are revealed that the general in charge of the Ants military is going to engineer a war intended to eliminate the worker ants to create a new, pure, militaristic ant society. And it's up to Z to stop him. A lot of behind-the-scenes shenanigans between these two films, because according to DreamWorks' John Lasseter, he ran a pitch for A Bug's Life to Jeffrey Katzenberg, who would leave Pixar in a dispute with Steve Jobs, who was in charge at the time, and to form DreamWorks. So he was somebody who knew that Pixar was doing this movie and then bought a pitch about ants from the directors of this film. So it seems, that Katzenberg was trying to undercut his former employer, now competitor, with this movie. So it's interesting that in this movie that purposefully or accidentally is anti-capitalist in structure kind of exists because of personal vendettas between capitalist ding-dongs.
But that is also the disease that is capitalism, because capitalism will dunk on capitalism to do capital.
Yep.
And we just sort of have to... Also, this, we're talking almost 30 years ago. Movies like this were few and far between. Now Pixar pretty much drops banger after banger about generational trauma and feelings and a lot of issues, even though Disney is a problematic company, right? It's like woke capitalism, you know, and we can hold that, you know, a movie like Black Panther was really exciting and excited a lot of people, and Black Panther 2 also was like ways ahead in making these very powerful movies while also portraying like the CIA as good guys and also being run by a conglomerate and gigantic company. So Ants is made by DreamWorks, lots of money, and This Bug's Life is made by Pixar, which is lots of money. Mm-hmm. I think Bug's Life was one of the very earliest Pixar movies, yet they do this great thing. And also, competition is good. We don't want monopsonies and monopolies. We want stuff. And before I talk about this movie, I want to make a little bit of an aside about when we talk about movies that have monsters in them, and not, I'm not talking about the Frankenstein kind, and also Frankenstein, the only Frankenstein. I mean, I know that in the book Frankenstein, which nobody has really probably read, it's really fucking good.
Yeah, it is.
The real monster is Dr. Frankenstein. The quote-unquote monster is actually not named Frankenstein. He's just the monster. And he's not the monster. So the in these two movies that we're discussing, and the reason why I decided that I would discuss them is for a few reasons. So in... I don't know what to do about art that is that has gross monsters in it. Yep. And sometimes, like, I'm perfectly fine never watching another Woody Allen movie. I always thought Woody Allen was very overrated. The movie Manhattan is so gross now, watching with the context that you have.
Yeah.
He's not talentless, but I'm okay never watching another one of his movies. And I think that's fine. And now movies that feature people like Woody Allen, I'm more like, well, let me present this with an asterisk. Let me watch this with an asterisk. I don't know. I'm unsure that just erasing films, music, books from the canon is necessarily the right thing to do. I don't have a perfect answer, and I'm always open. You can use the zebraspod@gmail.com email to put your thoughts, because I'm always open. I think what HBO Max did with Gone with the Wind was really thoughtful. What people think happened when HBO Max started preparing and showing Gone with the Wind, an incredibly problematic movie, was that they edited it. They did not. That they added all these disclaimers. They did not. There's just like a 10-minute preface that you can skip, but a 10-minute preface that talks about the context about the film and talks about the problems of the film, and does not pretend that the film doesn't have problems. And then you watch it.
Yeah.
Now, for some reason, I'm drawing a total blank about the really bad movie from back in the day. That
Birth of a Nation?
Yes. I don't think we need to watch Birth of a Nation.
Nope.
As a full film, I really don't. I think it's a piece of shit. Like, we don't have to watch, in my opinion, like, actual propaganda. Like, I don't have any need to watch Nazi propaganda films. And I don't think there's any need to watch Birth of a Nation as a full movie. I think there could be some use in watching pieces of it, to know, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think Ants is a really great movie about, like, unpacking capitalism from a very accessible point. And I've met a lot of people that started questioning capitalism from the movie Ants and from the movie The Bug's Life. So I think it's important, but I also think it's important to talk about the fact that Woody Allen, at the very best possible thing, groomed and married his partner's child that he knew since he was a kid. I want to be very careful. That is, well, we don't know about the grooming, so allegedly. But at the very best interpretation, he allegedly groomed, or at least knew, his partner of a very long time's child when they were a child, and then started a relationship and are still together to this day. That is irrefutable. When you say he married his stepdaughter, that's not true. they were, because him and Mia Farrow were never married, so not his step, not his stepdaughter, but is his child Ronan's, Ronan, yeah, sister, is one, is his son's sister, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. And there are also allegations that he was incredibly inappropriate with his daughter. But that has not been proven, and there are documentaries and writings that give salient points on both places. And again, because I don't want a lawsuit, so I'm just being very careful. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying, at the very least, he's done some problematic things that I think most people would consider inappropriate. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, just the casting of Manhattan, you know, Muriel Hemingway came into the public eye because of this movie Lipstick, where her and Margot Hemingway are both the victims of sexual assault. And so Woody Allen saw this 14-year-old girl as a victim of sexual assault and was like, I'm going to cast her as my girlfriend. Like, I think that's all you need to know about Woody Allen.
Right. And that's that. And I have no need to watch any of his movies, but I don't know if we should make all of his movies unavailable. I don't know if we should just be like, we're never watching a Roman Polanski movie ever again. I don't know. I don't know that it's my place to make those decisions. I'm open for dialogue, and I think a case-by-case basis is also useful.
Yeah.
I think music is a little bit easier because it's like really just like a couple people involved, where a movie has maybe 200 people, and a lot of those people make their living off of publishing and ASCAP and like residuals. So it's really not cut and dry. Kevin Spacey, who's in A Bug's Life, ever since I was an adult in New York, I heard rumblings, allegedly, of him being inappropriate with young men in clubs. And then he's had a lot of allegations, and he's slowly trying to come back, and he will, because we live in a society where people are so angry at cancel culture that it almost becomes like a riding cry for certain populations.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like a badge of honor. And also, like, when it comes to cancel culture, as a social worker, I have a problem with it because I don't think punitive actions are in line with my belief of restorative justice. And obviously there are behaviors that are really hard to go there. I'm sure when you were like, dude, we're recording Ants in Bug's Life, is Scott going to go into prison reform and and restorative justice? But here we are.
Hell,
so
yeah.
In my life, working with primarily working class people, forgiveness, which also is like, if you come from a spiritual standpoint, like forgiveness is divine. I have to believe in the possibility of restoration. And for some reason, I'm losing a word right now, but
yeah, I am totally with you on the belief in forgiveness and restorative justice. But I think it also, if you're a long-term bad actor like a Kevin Spacey, I think it requires a great deal of effort and penance on the perpetrator's part to meet to reach that peak of forgiveness. It's a long climb.
No, totally. And I'm not saying that they're deserving of, these two people are deserving of it. I don't believe they are, because mm-hmm. they're remorseless.
Yep.
So they don't deserve that. But I want to change the language to accountability instead of canceling. I like to think of recycling mm-hmm. instead of calling out. I like calling in. Now these two people, they did really bad things and are remorseless. So I don't buy their redemption arc.
Yeah.
But like when someone said some bad things when they were 16 or 17 or 5 years ago and they take responsibility of it, I should believe there should be a path forward.
Definitely.
And obviously there's a difference between words and behaviors and actions. And that's a problem with a lot of this, the culture of cancel culture, that a lot of things are packed in, like sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, and then also words and art. Like that all should have separate ways of discussion so we can figure out the task at hand.
It's very chaotic who gets the ire of the internet and who doesn't, who gets forgiven, who gets punished. You know, it has nothing to do with the victims, the severity of the actions. It's chaotic.
Exactly. But ants.
Yeah.
I know that we're not going to be able to do like a big synopsis of this movie today. I just wanted to get people excited about these movies and the idea that cartoons from the 90s might be the reason why you're radicalized. Whereas I'm realizing that my favorite video game from when I was a kid, Final Fantasy Tactics, is largely the first thing, that and Deep Space Nine, that got me excited about leftism.
Mm-hmm.
So Ants is basically a movie about the plight of the working person and how the working person is screwed over and why we need unions and clarity and kindness and how we can all work together.
The ant society is very analogous to like a early 20th to mid 20th century industrial society, whereas A Bug's Life is very agrarian, like a colonial society, really. And so I think like that paradigm is really interesting when you see these, you know, ants working together in the early part of the movie, but not realizing their collective power. And, you know, there is a Atlas sculpture in the film that seems to be referencing like the cover of Atlas Shrugged, as in like satirizing the ideas of Ayn Rand. And so I'm just very curious as to, you know, the intentionality of Ants, because the directors Eric Darnell and Tim Johnson, they don't really have like political content in their other work. You know, Eric Darnell did the Madagascar movies. Tim Johnson did like Over the Hedge and Home, you know, pretty standard DreamWorks animation fare that, you know, they'll make a profit and be, you know, forgotten 2 years later. So I don't know where it comes from, but I think that's also sort of like the magic of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because production on especially animated films is so long, because the scale of the number of people is so enormous that are working on these movies, that there's this sort of like magical elixir of people and ideas and work habits, philosophies that get mixed, and it brings out something interesting. And while I think Ants, in a lot of ways, like, has aged poorly in animation standards, like, I don't think it's a very aesthetically beautiful film. I think it's poorly animated. Mm-hmm. It was rushed into production to beat A Bug's Life. It's still something really interesting that it was able to be created out of these corporate wars that we talked about earlier in this nascent stage of computer animation. And I think it's a testament to why, like, art is special, even if it doesn't, you know, hold up artistically.
Yeah. And that's why I just wanted, this is more like an episode to get people excited and look at these things and also see how we can unpack super pop movies and look at them from a leftist standpoint. Mm-hmm. Also, like, if you go on Reddit and be like, what are some leftist cartoons? These are two that are listed. And I don't like to use Reddit as my form of research, but I was like, oh yeah, sometimes I like to use the internet to jog my memory, use it as a divination tool.
Yeah.
And I do want to say that I think Ayn Rand is not only a not very good writer, has inspired, if you look at people, if there's someone on the internet that you think has terrible takes, there's a very good chance that they're an objectivist / libertarian, and or have, like, copies of Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead in their library. And I've read Atlas Shrugged. I don't think it's a very good book. I have not read The Fountainhead. I don't think objectivism is a very good belief system, and I don't think it's good for workers. And I think that libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism and things of that nature are pretend that they're good for people. But just look up this story about this New Hampshire libertarian town and what happened when all these libertarians tried to take over a town in New Hampshire and run it from a libertarian lens. It didn't work out. Spoiler warning.
In a shocking twist.
Ugh. Because, like, just like, dude, like, roads are great. Libraries, awesome. Pipes, firemen, things of that nature, really great. We're recording around tax day. I'm not happy with where all my taxes went, but, like,
hey, speaking of leftist pop art, BioShock.
Oh yeah.
And hey, I haven't watched the Fallout series, but I think when you have the original video games that came out in the late 90s and Starship Troopers were both these incredible satires of, like, Cold War era American propaganda and, like, nuclear terror, you know, I'm pretty sure there's some origin story about my leftism in those things, and a lot of the ideas in those games are counterpoints to the ideas of objectivism.
Yes, so. And I very much want to talk about Starship Troopers one of these days, especially because, yes, like, I didn't get it the first time I watched it when I was a kid. I was just like, this is a terrible action movie. And then, like, a year later, I watched it again. I'm like, oh, I didn't know the word satire so good when I was 17. I was just like, oh, this is, like, making fun of this genre. Yeah. And like, oh, this is actually, like, really great. But
I have to give my 12-year-old self credit, because I read Starship Troopers before the movie came out.
Fair enough.
And I was like, yo, this is some revolting bullshit. And so when I saw the movie, I'm like, oh, it's making fun of all this stuff in the book. Interesting.
So let's talk about This Bug's Life.
Sure. A Bug's Life is about another sort of awkward independent thinker aunt, this one named Flick, played by Dave Foley, who I think is great in the film, who thinks that through his inventions, he can make life easier for his ant colony, but he ends up really kind of through comic circumstances, making everybody else's life more difficult. But this particular colony is more or less colonized by a group of grasshoppers who every year or every season require tribute from this colony. And so most of the colony's effort throughout the year is devoted to providing enough food for grasshoppers. And when Flick, through his attempts to improve life for the colony, ends up destroying one of these tributes, he's banished, and he has to sort of find his way back figuratively and literally. And, you know, of course, the evil grasshoppers are defeated through cartoon shenanigans, as is appropriate. And I do think, you know, this is an interesting take on the way colonialism oppresses people. But I think it also, like, reinforces social order, because colonialism bad, but monarchy good. And I know that, you know, we're talking about a Disney film, and so I do not require perfect politics from a Disney movie, but because this is our raison d'etre, I think we can examine the politics of a Bug's Life at face value.
Yeah, and I also just thought that, like, you to discuss ants, I thought discussing Bug's Life just made more sense, and we already discussed Matawan, so, you know, I think Bug's Life is obviously illustrated better and is like more fun, but I prefer ants.
And I one of the things that I do love about Pixar is their, like, heavy hitter bullpen of character actors as voice actors. So, you know, like, you have people like Alex Rocco or Bonnie Hunt. Madeline Kahn is in this movie. Phyllis Diller is in this movie. Richard Kind, you know, he's been in like 12 Pixar movies, like John Ratzenberger. These are people who always deliver. And, you know, in Ants, you do have fucking Gene Hackman in that movie. But it's just almost comforting to be in the hands of this era of Pixar, because you know that they know how to deliver a story. And while I think A Bug's Life is lesser than, you know, like a Toy Story or Wall-E, I think that you can see the future glory of Pixar in the DNA of A Bug's Life.
Absolutely. And I know that we will be discussing Pixar again, because I think Wall-E is a very prescient piece about consumerism and where we are today, and sort of predicted some things that I didn't think it meant to predict. But on this short sort of, you know, almost like half episode where we just like vibe about some cartoons.
Yeah.
What are your some closing thoughts, and if you were to recommend someone to watch these movies, what should they pay attention to?
You know, just I think this to circle back to how we deal with art. You know, I'm a lover of classic film and westerns and film noir, and I've also struggled with the idea that, you know, those movies were made in a system that was inherently racist and sexist and also abusive to many of the people that were in its employ. So if I were to say that we can't watch, you know, Roman Polanski movies anymore, well, you know, how many monsters were making amazing movies in the 40s? So I'd be a hypocrite if I were to suggest something like that. So it, yeah, I think it's a case by case basis. And I think, what to pay attention to in these movies, like, is a lot of the organizing principles, that they're talking about, because, you know, in A Bug's Life, you have the villain Hopper showing his fear of the ants' collective power, that he tells the other grass hoppers that he's really oppressing, that they cannot let the ants realize how much power they actually have, that they have to keep their boot firmly on the face, on the neck of the ants, or else they're going to rise up and destroy them, because their numbers are so much greater than the grasshoppers. Their power, once they realize it, will overwhelm the grasshoppers easily. And I think that is such a, like, coherently stated point for why, like, unions, collectivism, class solidarity, are all important and good ideas, and should be looked at and examined and put in art, frankly.
Yeah. And I enjoy continuing to unpack these things with you.
Same here, Scott. Thank you.
And when you next see us, we're going to go light. The next few episodes are going to be animation focused. So hold on to your butts and hold on to your seats, whatever, you know what I mean, and have a good time.